C-minus 19. Stevenson Farm, Eastview, Colorado.
Joe, it's me, Richard Walker calmly said, speaking into the relatively new phone which Joe Crabb himself had delivered along with a new computer after Emma Ford and the McCarthy brothers wisely took everything on the night of the DS-1 launch disaster and Walker's simultaneous disappearance. Joe and the rest of the world knew nothing about that episode, of course, but the California fireball had now convinced Walker once and for all that it was time for that to change. I want to do a live video interview, Walker continued. There's something I need to tell the world, something I've wanted to get off my chest for a long time. It shouldn't take much more than 20 minutes. Of course, Joe enthusiastically replied, fondly remembering the exponential spike in viewing and listening figures he had enjoyed after Walker appeared on Crabshoot Radio around a year earlier to defend his decision to cover up all proof of the existence of intelligent extraterrestrial life. Naturally, Joe had no idea of the palpable irony of the topic Walker intended to broach on this occasion. Can I have 20 minutes to get everything ready? Certainly, but Joe, I need you to make me a promise. I need you to promise, that you won't cut this interview off. Why would I do something like that? Joe asked. Walker hesitated, choosing his words carefully. Because you're not going to like what I have to say, he eventually said. No one is going to like what I have to say. Well, I absolutely promise that I'll let you say it, every single word. Walker hung up without saying goodbye. He then poured himself two glasses of whiskey, as was his way. Some visitors over the years had no doubt thought he did this for show, to make people talk, as he often liked to do, but they didn't know the truth. It was more of a family custom than a habit, one Walker had picked up from his own father, a stoic man who died too young. Franklin Walker had always poured himself two glasses, and he explained to the inquisitive young Richard that he did so in tribute to his own late father, with whom he had shared many a glass. One day that second glass will be yours, Franklin had told his son, and on the boy's 14th birthday he proved true to his word. From that day onwards, the two glasses were shared between them. Franklin unwaveringly poured and drank an extra glass every night during the harrowing spell when Richard was held captive in Vietnam, and Richard had maintained the custom every time he'd sat down for a drink since the night of Franklin's untimely passing. Richard hadn't expected to reflect on this after calling Joe, but the thoughts were there, and they quickly turned to regrets that he had never had a son of his own to slide that second glass to like his father had slid it to him. This particular regret didn't last long when Richard reflected on the state of the world and the sickening weakness of its leaders. He wouldn't wish 80 years in a world of Valerie Slaters and William Godfrey's on his worst enemy, much less a child of his own. Here, boy, Walker called, beckoning his loyal dog, Rooster. If they do something to stop me, Joe will be here soon. Joe, remember Joe? Joe will come to get you. But if they come back, you can go outside. Outside, okay? Rooster looked up at him like any dog would, wondering what the hell his owner was saying and how the hell he expected him to understand it. Walker stood up and placed a large bag of dog food in the hallway, open at the top and tipped on its side. He then filled three water bowls and opened the external doors at both ends of the house. This had the dual effect of creating a wind tunnel and confusing Rooster even further. Stay, Walker said, unless they come back. Stay was one word the dog did understand, of course, but the rest meant nothing. He sat obediently on the kitchen floor. Good dog, Walker said. He walked towards his bedroom, computer in hand, then stopped at the door and looked back. You always were a good dog, he added, quickly going inside and closing the door behind him before he got emotional. He firmly trusted that Rooster wouldn't leave unless something spooked him, in which case Walker would hate for him to be trapped, so the possibility of him making a thoughtless exit in pursuit of a passing bird or whatever else might appear outside was a risk that had to be taken. Inside his bedroom, Walker set the computer down on his bedside table and opened the chat window where Joe Crabb would appear as soon as he was ready. Richard Walker didn't fear many things, but his heart was beating fast.